You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
There are a lot of personal stories, I suppose, about my family, especially about my two older brothers, JP and Neil, and about them sort of finding their feet. There are also some kind of odd little character portraits of people who I found interesting. Like one was a French postman called Ferdinand Chevel. And my brother JP was also a postman, and a postie rather. A postman is kind of a funny archaic term. But and also there's a piece about this very rare skeletal disorder, and the man who had it, who donated his body to science. And there are pieces about chiropractic. You know, when you sort of have your body adjusted and manipulated to sort of release certain pressures, which I know sounds a bit weird, but yeah, there were just certain experiences I had that from the outside, I suppose they just seemed everyday and kind of even maybe a bit banal, but for me at the time, they were quite intense. And yeah, so it's, I don't know, it's still really hard to say what it is about. I suppose a lot of them, they kind of feel a bit existential. Yeah, but somehow I think it kind of hangs together.
Bill Manhire said that some of your personal essays feel like beautifully told short stories. They just happen to be true or true-ish, which I agreed with. And how do you kind of approach the truth and the kind of haziness of memory in writing about your life?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think I did think a lot about that when I was writing, especially because so many of the pieces were about other people and other lives. But then also I approached it from the point of my own experience, and being very, very deeply embedded in my own feeling and the way I experienced things. And I think, yeah, I suppose I'm more interested in the ish of, you know, true, when Bill says true-ish. I think every experience is, you know, it's such an obvious thing to say, but it's experienced so, so differently from person to person. Like in one of the pieces, it's called Wolfman. It starts off with my dad making this very blunt remark about the fact that I had a moustache, and and when I talked to him about this, you know, many, many years later, he said, "Oh yeah, I sort of remember that. I think just throwaway remark," and obviously he had meant nothing. You know, there was no. He didn't mean to be hurtful at all. But for me, just that one moment kind of sent me into this ridiculous spiral of self-conscious, being incredibly self-conscious and questioning my whole notion of beauty and how I looked in the world. So just that one moment. I mean, I know I'm not saying anything particularly groundbreaking about father-daughter relationships there, because that's kind of how they work. But so I was just interested in the different ways that people experience the same moment and how they felt to me.
Reading some of your essays in the book, something that I noticed, or maybe just read into, was that like you kind of have a starting point and then you work backwards to find the story behind that. I'm thinking especially of your essay that you mentioned about the boy with the rare skeletal disorder. Is that something that you actively try to do?
No, I'm not sure if I do. I think I'm just trying to retrace. I'm trying to find some part of the story that that feels really significant to me. It's tricky. Especially obviously when I'm talking about historical people who I can really only reconstruct that piece from things that I've read and photographs I've seen. So kind of often it was, the important thing was holding on to my first feeling when I came across that story, and that character. It was sort of, it was holding on to the impressions that I had, and then how that changed as I learnt about them.
And how did you go about choosing which essays to include in the book?
Oh yeah, I started writing the book actually ages ago, in 2009, when I did a Master of Arts in Creative Writing at the Institute of Modern Letters at Victoria. And so kind of the bulk of the book, I suppose, was written then. But then I kind of just left it for a few years. And I did actually, when I finally came back to it, I did take a few things out, which felt overly angsty to me and just a bit too raw. And I'd also written quite a bit in the meantime, some of which was on my blog. So, yeah, I held on to the spirit of the book that I started with in 2009. But then I just reshaped it a wee bit and added some more things that felt like they fitted with that. I just wanted it to feel like I was basically proud of it, and not too embarrassed by anything overly angsty. So yeah, that kind of guided my selection process.
For sure. And did you have anybody in mind that you were writing these essays to?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess that's so funny. I was talking to Jack Lazenby, the children's author. I used to write to him when I was quite little, and he would write back. I went to interview him just a couple of weeks ago. It was the most surreal kind of encounter, but I wrote about that for this children's website called The Sapling. And one of the things he said was just he's quite a grumpy old guy, and I love him. I absolutely adore him. And he said, I actually don't think it's necessary to know your audience, because he said to stop going into to visit children now because his hearing is too bad, to visit schools and classes. And he just said, you write for yourself. First and foremost, you write for yourself, which I thought was really, really interesting for someone who has written for so many different ages and just can connect with so many different audiences, and for him to say, oh no, you write for yourself. And I think maybe that is true, actually. I think for me, anyway, for this essay collection, that's probably true, that it was me making sense of things for myself. But at the same time, I dedicated the book to my niece and nephew who live in London, who are just, they're 8 and 10. I just thought it would be a cool thing for them to have some weird history, family history.
And you mentioned before that you graduated from the International Institute of Modern Letters at Victoria University, and you won the Institute's annual award for excellence, the Adam Foundation Prize, in 2009 for that manuscript that then became Can You Tolerate This? How do you feel that kind of education shaped your writing?
I think the biggest gift of that course was time, being given deadlines throughout the year, having people around you all the time who were giving you really thoughtful, considered feedback. That was just such a gift. And without having been able to give myself that time of that year, there's no way I would have been able to write that first manuscript. And the other big thing was just the boost to confidence. Because you have all these wonderful people you probably wouldn't have come across otherwise, and they all kind of piled together in this room, and we talk about each other's writing, and there's something about that that it just can really break this. Often I think there's a kind of barrier between when you're writing something, you kind of sometimes I can't even imagine anyone ever reading it or having thoughts about it, and then for that to happen in a small safe group, you start to think, oh no, maybe I can do this. And and the other big thing about the course was just the reading. You have to do a lot of reading throughout the year, and that also was just hugely formative, and I think that was that's just something I've tried to keep up through the rest of my life, is just constantly reading.
And you talked a bit before about the title of your essay collection, but tell me about the cover image.
Oh, yeah. So the cover image is of my brother John Paul's red bomber jacket that he wore when he was in his early 20s. It was a jacket given to him by this old English teacher that we had at Te Kuiti High School. And he wore this jacket. JP, my brother, wore the jacket everywhere, and it was just the most awful jacket. My older brother Neil and I just hated it, and it just it kind of became this much huger deal than it should have been. But we both just thought this jacket was awful. It was just like doing a disservice to JP. So anyway, the picture is of that jacket kind of billowing up into the sky, because what the eventual fate of the jacket is unknown, but there's a part in the essay about it that I kind of imagine it like flying up into the night sky. And so yeah, that's what it's doing. It's kind of flying away and looking slightly mournful.
It's so brilliant. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's quite funny.
And then a couple of months ago, it was announced that you won US$165,000 in a major US literary prize, the Wyndham Campbell Prize from Yale University. I know you've done a lot of interviews about this, but if you'll indulge us, what was finding out about that like?
Oh my God, it was just, yeah, I'm still actually, like even now, I'm still just a bit like, what the hell? How did this happen? It happened in the most kind of everyday way. I just had this email from someone named Michael Kelleher, who opened his email with greetings from Yale. And I don't know, I just thought, what is this? This is just nonsense. But when I forwarded it to my boss, Fergus, he said, no, I think probably you should ring these people. So yeah, so I rang them, and all of a sudden there were all these people in a room. I was on speakerphone. There were all these people in the room, like yelling at me and saying that. And that all the guy, the first guy I was speaking to, Michael Kelleher, said they'd all read my book, and they wanted to give me this vast amount of money. And yeah, it was just the most surreal moment of my life. I felt like I'd won a raffle, a massive, obviously a massive raffle that I had no idea I had a ticket for, that sort of. And so at the moment I'm planning with the organisers of the festival in Yale what sorts of events I'll be doing when I'm over there in September this year, because we all have to go to collect the prize. And the Yale Festival has all of the other winners too, because there are five other people who have won this prize. And yeah, so we have a few days of lots of talking about books, and then we all get on a train and go to New York. And I can't think about it too much at the moment, because I find these things pretty daunting, but I'm sure it will be completely wonderful.
And now, can you tell her that this is shortlisted for the Royal Society Te Aparangi Award for General Nonfiction at the upcoming Ockham Book Awards? What does that mean to you?
I actually can't believe the book has got this far. In my mind, it was always a very small book. And for it to have reached an audience in the first instance, and then to have this on it, I'm just ecstatic that it's got this far. And to be honest, I obviously it would be lovely to win, but I just am happy to just have a big party and celebrate everyone's books. the ceremony is next month in Auckland as part of the Writers Festival there. And the funny thing is, one of the other finalists and non-fiction is Adam Dudding, whose book I edited, and so it's kind of quite strange to be on the same shortlist as him. But yeah, obviously it would just be a massive, massive honour. But yeah, I'm happy just to have a huge party.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And this book came out last year. What is it that you're working on currently?
So I'm working on another book of poems, actually. which I'd kind of, that had always been the plan. So I'm really trying to get that finished for next year. But then after that, I do want to write more essays. So yeah, it sounds a bit strange, but I think I want to write something about animals, a book of essays about animals. I won't say anything more. I think it's going to work.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.